You're now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, and I help lead Delphi Ventures, as well as host some of the most in-the-weeds and thought-provoking guests across crypto, spanning Layer 1s to DeFi, NFTs, and beyond. The goal is to have fun, but also to dive deep and offer foundational episodes on projects and founders. Also, check out our research on Delphi Digital or miss out on the most compelling research there is. It's up to you. As a reminder, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. Delphi Ventures may hold tokens mentioned, so check out our transparency page in the show notes for more info. With that, let's dive in. See you guys on the other side. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tom Shaughnessy. I help lead Delphi Ventures, and I'm one of the co-founders. Today, I'm thrilled to have on Fran of Superfluid, who are tackling streaming payments. We're also an investor in them as a disclosure. We're extremely excited about that as well. Fran, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, Fran, so tell us a bit about yourself, man.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of different things in my life, but eventually about 4 years ago, I think it was autumn 2017, I landed in a room in Estonia where I just moved in into the country and I wanted to meet people. And I went to a meetup and it happened to be a crypto meetup. I just walked in the room and everybody had a screen open with a countdown. And I'm like, what are all these countdowns? You know, it was all ICO countdowns. I don't know if you remember that period of crypto. So there was a lot of electricity in the air. You know, it was very exciting. I had no idea what any of it was. But luckily, the person actually speaking at the meetup was very, very sophisticated and was talking about kind of crypto economic design. I was kind of immediately captivated. He gave me a few pointers of projects I should look at. And then I just fell down the rabbit hole pretty much immediately. Worked on a few kind of not very interesting things for about 6 months and then started working more deeply on the Ethereum development side. Not a developer myself, but kind of taught myself enough to code proof of concepts, understand Solidity, you know, understand kind of how stuff works in order to then, you know, look at how to also design stuff. I'd say I was one of those people who immediately jumped down the rabbit hole. I didn't find out about Bitcoin or crypto before. But as soon as I did, I just kind of dove in.
No, that's pretty cool. How did you come around for the idea of Superfluid? Like, what were you seeing in the market that, you know, you thought, hey, I want to fix this, or hey, I want to change this? Like, how did you kind of land on the idea for Superfluid?
Yeah, so me and my current CTO, so Miao, we were working on a different project called Ardai. This was a derivative built on top of Compound, where you could split the principal from the interest and redirect the interest to a third party, right? So it was exciting. It was one of the first DAI derivative tokens. A lot of people were excited at that time from the fact that we had lending markets at all. But what really captivated me and Miao was the fact that we could redirect interest and make it accrue in a third-party account without making any transactions, right? So we started thinking a lot of how this was happening. How were we moving money on chain without making any intermediary transactions, right? So that kind of captivated us. And from a technical point of view, we started thinking how we could generalize that into non-interest related streams. So just generic streams, right? So how can we use this idea that we've built and transform it into a protocol that can allow us to send money over time? So it was more of a technical intuition. So we came up with how to do it first, and then we came up with what it's useful for. Ultimately, it's funny because if I look back, I was actually criticizing money streaming on Twitter. So if you look back at my tweets in 2019, before we came up with Superfluid, I was, you know, openly kind of saying that stuff didn't make sense. And that was more about how it was previously implemented, right? So Superfluid has some characteristics that previous attempts at money streaming don't have, which in my opinion make all the difference, right? So while I was previously a critic of the idea, I then, you know, immediately flipped into loving the idea. And now, you know, obviously we're working on it every day.
It's pretty cool. I mean, what's your thesis on just why payments today are broken, right? Like, we live in a society where everything is kind of a, you know, recurring subscription, or, you know, check how many I have at the end of the month on my card. I probably just forgot about all of them. But like, what's your take on like re-architecting our world from, you know, recurring subscriptions and here's a card to something that's programmable or something that's streamed? Like, do you have a thesis around why that's broken in the traditional world?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I think it's super exciting that we're even talking about this now, you know, that we have a protocol that can actually solve these problems is pretty amazing. And it's testament to the fact that crypto is a land of opportunity and innovation. But I wanted to maybe mention, you know, Silicon Valley has been talking about subscriptions for ages. There's entire VCs that have built a thesis around the fact that everything is going to become a service. Everything is going to become recurring payment. Everything is going to become a subscription. But they never actually went and looked into how those subscriptions work. And there hasn't been any fundamental change in the way subscriptions work since pretty much ever. In Europe, everything is monthly. In the US, most things are monthly. Salaries are biweekly. But ultimately, it still works exactly the same as if you had to, you know, physically carry a check to your landlord, right? So why is it that card payments still follow the same schedule as, you know, old kind of paper-based money transfer systems? Why is it that, you know, you use a service all month and you pay it at the end of the month? Why is it that you work every day, but you get paid every so often, right? Realistically, this is purely a habit. It's just a tradition. It's something we got stuck with. And again, I trace it back to the fact that you really don't want to see your landlord too often, right? So giving him a check once a month is often enough, right? You don't want to see him more than that. And that kind of carried on into everything else, right? It was the friction of the payment method that we started with that carried on into modernity, even though now we could, you know, very easily automate that and make it a more frequent payment. So unfortunately, I think streaming payments are definitely a good technical solution, but they're not going to help us to change people's traditions and habits. That's something that we have to do ourselves. That's something that, you know, everybody looking at this technology and at its opportunity should think really hard at. Why are they waiting 2 weeks or a month to get paid by their employer? Why is that the case? Why are they accepting that? And ultimately, they shouldn't. If you think about it, every delay in payment carries a risk. If you're working 2 weeks or a month for your employer, and they're paying you at the end of the month, effectively, you're giving them free of interest loan, right? You're giving them a loan. They're not paying you for that loan. And at the end of the month, they could not pay you. You're shouldering all of the risk of that transaction. And, you know, the employer ultimately could default before and not pay you at the end of the month. If you were paid more often, the risk would be reduced. So reducing the risk in service provision, reducing the risk in employment, reducing the risk of every delayed payment is a huge opportunity, because ultimately risk makes things more expensive, and reducing that risk also, you know, increases the liquidity and capital efficiency. So ultimately, we believe streaming payments are strictly better way of paying, although if you look at it from a micro point of view, they may seem like they're worse for one of the two parties in a payment. They are a net improvement if you look at it from a global point of view.
That's really interesting. I mean, the capital efficiency point makes a lot of sense, right? Because people are getting their money, you know, much sooner. They don't have to wait 2 weeks, they can get it streamed. I'm curious though, do you think that culturally in a Web 2 and traditional environment, people will welcome this? It seems to me like in a Web 3 sense, it kind of makes more sense, right? You know, somebody's part of a DAO, they're interacting, they're earning tokens, and potentially they can earn it in a streamed manner so that they can get rewarded and see that they're actually earning something for their work. Do you think that Superfluid will be more prominent in a Web 3 sense, or do you think it'll be also as prominent, you know, in the Web 2 sense? And also, just to play devil's advocate, I mean, we love Superfluid. We use it to stream salaries for our employees at Delphi as well. So obviously we're a user, but would love your take just on the dichotomy between the Web 2 and the Web 3 user for Superfluid.
Yeah, I think you're onto something, right? I mean, Web 3 is always changing things radically, right? So people in Web 3 are used to disruptive behaviors, right? And this is all this is, ultimately. As I said, you know, sure, there's the technical side, but getting people used to this is going to be the hard part. But in Web 3, people adopt new technologies because we are able to kind of question realities that we got used to, right? So you were mentioning the interest case, right? In DeFi and in Web 3, we're used to getting interest that compounds every block. That's just a fact, right? You wouldn't accept an interest that doesn't compound every block, because now that's just the standard. If you look at how the banks work, they still, you know, give you a statement at the end of the month, and it's a monthly compounding. So if you look at people in traditional finance, they're happy with that. People in Web3 would never accept that, right? So it's a matter of, I think, showing people that things can be better. And once they get used to that, they'll never want to go back. Like if you're getting paid every second, if you're able to, you know, set up your financial life to get paid every second, invest every second, pay for your expenses every second, ultimately, it's so much better for you. It's so much more convenient that you will never want to go back to a monthly paycheck. That's the way we push adoption. I think that's the way to do it, right? Rather than trying to convince people, it's just improving things dramatically and then getting them hooked so they never want to go back.
No, you're totally right. I definitely think that Web3 people are accustomed to having stream payments just because of how we interact with DeFi and Web3, where we get interest per block, we yield farm, and we earn per block, and we just see everything happen very quickly.
Yeah.
I'm curious, do you think that Superfluid will be used for DAO to DAO value exchange as well, or is that less important? I'd assume it's as important because of all the flows that the end DAOs have to pay out to, say, their contributors or to their expenses. So it kind of makes sense to have just in time streams as well, but curious what you think there.
Yeah, I think all sorts of payments will be streamed in the future. As of now, it's still a bit of a mix. I'd say at the moment, it's mostly companies or DAOs paying their contributors. We haven't seen much DAO-to-DAO payments, but that I think is more because there aren't that many DAO-to-DAO payments yet. And when there are these kinds of payments, they're often settled in governance tokens rather than money, right? So I think that might be one of the reasons. But going forward, this is definitely going to become the case. We're speaking to some DAOs who have a multi-layer structure, right? So they have like a big DAO, and then they have subgroups or units or whatever they want to call them that handle specific things and have a budget. And for those kinds of DAOs, having internal streams makes a lot of sense, right? So it's a way of budgeting whereby you say, I want to give this business unit a certain amount of money. And then this effectively, the moment they open the stream, it will start flowing and it will keep flowing until it's stopped, right? So it's a way of making recurring payments that don't require more than one transaction. And this is very good for DAOs because DAOs have very high transaction costs. They need a lot of people to coordinate to get around the table and vote, right? So in order to streamline that, having only one decision to be made that will initiate a payment that will continue potentially forever is a very big improvement in advent. And that's the reason we're very excited to see DAOs adopt this for things like budgeting, and then smaller DAOs to adopt this for things like contributor payments. DAO to DAO payments, I'm 100% sure will come. We are starting to see DAOs form as guilds, right? Doing kind of work. And I think as we start seeing more DAOs coordinate around specific functions, we will start seeing them work for different DAOs and getting paid by different DAOs. And ultimately, they'll want to get paid every second. So I'm pretty sure that will happen.
No, that's really cool. I totally agree with you on making that happen. So let's walk through an example, right? So like if I have your app up, like app.superfluid.finance, for those that kind of want to follow along, you could try it out on Polygon and some test networks. Like, how do you get started with Superfluid? Like, if I have, an amount of money in my wallet, how do I set up these streams? How many transaction fees do I have to pay to get this started? And I mean, worst case scenario, let's say I want to cancel something. How do I go about doing all that?
Well, first of all, it's maybe worth going back a bit and saying what Superfluid is, right? So Superfluid at its core is a token standard, which defines a flavor of ERC-20, which has an extra functionality, which is streaming, right? So Superfluid tokens are streamable. So going back to your example, right? You go to our dashboard, you want to send a stream. Well, first thing, you need tokens that are streamable. And the most likely situation is that you don't have any in your wallet. So if you want to stream, for example, USDC or DAI, what you would do immediately is wrap that into the Superfluid version. So we call them super tokens. So once you do this upgrade, so you go from normal USDC to super USDC, then you basically are in a situation where you can stream. At that point, if you know who you want to pay, you know how much you want to pay them, you can simply open a stream. That's one transaction. So you open a stream specifying who the recipient is and how much you want to pay them per second. And once that transaction is confirmed, basically the payment will go on until you stop it or until you run out of funds. So, if you're, imagine you're paying all your staff, right? You upgrade a bunch of tokens to super tokens, start all the streams you need. And then as long as you keep topping up that account with super tokens, everybody will get paid and you will never need to touch the streams again. The day you want to fire someone, right? Or you want to maybe give them a raise, all you have to do is upgrade or delete that stream. And as soon as the transaction is confirmed, the stream stops and basically their account stops increasing and your account stops decreasing. So it's as simple as that. You know, one account can have any number of outgoing streams. An account can also have any number of incoming streams. And incoming and outgoing streams can coexist, which means if you're a business that has subscription revenue and you're also paying salaries, the money that comes in to pay your subscriptions can simultaneously be used to pay for your employees, right? So the money flows in every second and flows out every second in a constant manner, right? And that's where the capital efficiency comes into play, right? So generally, if you think of a normal business, you'll get paid throughout the month. And then at the end of the month, you'll pay all your payroll. If some of your invoices don't get paid, you might have a capital problem. In the case of Superfluid, you get paid every second. You pay every second. If somebody stops their stream, you know immediately. And you don't have to wait to the end of the month to adjust to that. So when things start getting very exciting with Superfluid is when people have both incoming and outgoing streams. Because you start seeing really this extreme capital efficiency kick in, and you never need to necessarily top up your account because you are receiving funds in that account at the same time as you're spending them. So you don't need to actively top up the account in the same way.
Super cool. And any token can be wrapped in a sense of super token. Like if I have a native governance token for a DAO or a project that I want to stream to my contributors for their work, it doesn't have to be USDC, right? Anybody can go and wrap the token that they want on Superfluid.
Yeah, so pretty much any ERC-20 works. We have some limitations on rebasing tokens, but they can be overcome as well. You can also issue your token directly using Superfluid. So that's something a few projects have experimented with. So, you know, if you know you're going to use streaming functionalities and you're not afraid to use something cutting edge, you can basically just issue your token directly through Superfluid. And in that case, you never have to upgrade or downgrade. 100% of the token supply is streamable. And that's really the best experience. We're working with a few projects so that when they bridge from mainnet to Polygon, their token is immediately streamable as well. So that's really the best UX for us. But obviously, you know, a lot of tokens have already been issued. So the wrapping, unwrapping part is necessary. But over time, you know, we think as more people use these functionalities, they'll get used to it. And as they use more apps in the Superfluid ecosystem, you know, they'll have less of a need to upgrade and downgrade so often. You know, as I was saying before, if you get paid in Superfluid, you can also make payments in Superfluid and you don't have to downgrade or upgrade the tokens at all because the money can just flow through your account.
That's really cool. And the upgrade downgrade process is pretty interesting. So for those that want liquidity or want to exchange their super tokens, they would have to downgrade them, I guess, and then exchange them for, you know, the asset that they're looking for. Or is there a way to exchange super tokens to other super tokens?
Yeah, so we're working on a way to exchange super tokens for super tokens. And you can also actually already use a DCA app. So if you're interested in trying a new app, I really suggest this. Go to ricochet.exchange. It's a really, really cool application built on the Superfluid protocol. And basically what it allows you to do is send a stream of tokens, which will be transformed into a different token, right? So your dollar cost averaging into a different asset. Their most active markets, I think, are USDC to Ether, USDC to Bitcoin, DAI to Ether, DAI to Bitcoin. So you can, you know, go from stables to Ether or Bitcoin. They've got liquidity mining going on. And basically what you're doing there as a user is one action, right? You're opening a stream. That's it. Now, after that, the contract basically accumulates funds for about 20 minutes. And every 20 minutes makes a purchase of that token to you. After they make the purchase, they use a different functionality of Superfluid to basically massively redistribute the tokens to everyone who has been streaming. So this is another functionality of Superfluid that's a bit harder to explain, so we don't talk about it too often. But basically, it allows you to send distributions of tokens to any number of recipients. So the way Ricochet works, even if it has hundreds of subscribers, it will always have a fixed cost to distribute the assets after it purchases them. So it's a very scalable system. As I was saying, you know, they're still early stages, but already have some very active markets. And I think they're consistently draining the liquidity on certain markets on Polygon because they're not as well arbitraged as the ones on mainnet. So, you know, they're starting to get some volume. And I think it's a very exciting project if anybody wants to have a look.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely link to it in the show notes. I guess just to zoom out, I think people might be interested in the secret sauce here, right? Like, you know, everybody in crypto pays an insane amount of fees for, you know, to use Ethereum. Granted, we have L2s coming, some are live. But like, what is the secret technical sauce for making streaming happening without having to pay transaction fees over and over again, right? Like you mentioned super tokens and the standards, but Like, where is the technical magic here that happens that enables all of this?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I've tried to explain it a bunch of times, and sometimes it just doesn't come out right, but I'll try. So basically, what happens with superfluid is that your balance is not settled by transactions, but rather transactions settle what we call agreements. So if you think of transfers, basically what you're saying is, I want to send $10 to Tom. So take out 10 from my account and add 10 to Tom's account, right? And that's a simple action that we can describe, right? And that's essentially what the transfer function does. And that's what transfers have looked like since we use ledgers, right? Even at the time of paper ledgers, that's basically what a transfer looks like. Now, when you send a stream using Superfluid, the transaction is not what's moving the money. The transaction is simply giving that similar instruction to the contract, and the contract will then execute that transfer over time without the user needing to do anything else. So the instruction you're giving to the smart contract is transfer $1 every second to Tom. Once you've sent that information, you don't need to send another transaction to the chain until that information changes, right? So the moment I want to stop sending $1 per second to Tom, I have to send another transaction. But until that moment, the contract has all the information it needs to calculate what my balance is, what your balance is, and you know, what the global state is. So until I change what the state looks like, I don't need to touch the blockchain, right? So for anything where we are able to very simply describe what the future state should look like, we are able to settle agreements rather than settling single transfers. I don't know if that made sense. But
No, it's helpful.
It's always a tough one to explain.
No, it's a highly technical thing that looks like magic to people on the outside, right? So, I mean, it makes sense. So like, instead of just doing an L1 transfer where you're signing a transaction and paying a fee, you're streaming within a smart contract and you only edit that if you want to stop it or modify it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the essence of the fact is that nothing changes, right? Like when you say, I want to transfer this amount every second, until that intention changes, you shouldn't need another transaction. And that's basically how Superfluid is built. So as long as your kind of contractual commitment stays the same, then there's no need to touch the blockchain. The moment you want to change your current commitments, then you need to touch the blockchain. And effectively, by innovating at the token standard layer, we're able to change the rules of settlement. Generally, settlement has only been happening in one specific way, but by rewriting the token contract itself, we're able to basically reinvent what settlement means, right? So in the case of Superfluid, settlement is effectively happening every block. So we're accounting for streams every second and we're settling the amounts every block. And this is only possible because of, you know, programmability built in blockchains, but also because we were, let's say, maybe crazy enough to go and change what the token standard itself looks like.
No, that's really cool. I mean, we spoke earlier about, you know, paying salaries or incentivizing people with tokens in a stream manner, but it sounds like the possibilities within DeFi are pretty cool, right? Like, I'm just trying to think about, you know, people get liquidated on a, you know, a DeFi app when they're taking out leverage, like, you know, being able to stream collateral from your own pool of capital just to continue to top up so you don't get liquidated. Like, you know, that's just off the top of my head, but like, there's a lot of examples here where I think you could work a DeFi really well.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much the way we think of it is really as a primitive, right? So if you think of your ERC20 token, until now, it had one single function, which was transfer, right? So that's all you could do with money. Just imagine that everywhere you're using transfer, you could now also use stream, right? So as you said, you could post collateral in a stream, but you could also borrow in a stream. You could also lend in a stream. You could also repay your loan in a stream. Maybe you can even exchange in a stream, right? You can add liquidity in a stream. You could yield farm in a stream, right? You can do anything in a stream. Like, some things might make more or less sense, but what's really interesting is not so much rebuilding exactly the same products, but it's more, what are the unique things that we couldn't do with transfers, but that we can do with streams? And that's where things start to get really exciting. The way I see it, streams are a way to make payments in the future. And that's something we could never really do with transfers, right? Transfers happen the moment you sign a transaction. Streams happen from the block after until you stop them, right? So it's a payment in the future. And this could open up a bunch of different opportunities, but from a very basic level, you can think of your relationship with applications being continuous rather than spot. There's a lot of financial crazy stuff that we're working on internally. We're probably going to be releasing some research probably next year at this point with some financial products that we're working on. There's some very interesting things you can do with streams. I'm really excited to, you know, start unveiling some of this stuff and getting people excited about the possibilities.
No, I'm amped. I mean, definitely take some time for the holidays, but you know, you guys have spent so much time building a primitive that now you kind of get to the fun part where you could start releasing, you know, your own ideas for how it should be used. I'd love to talk a little bit about the traction you've seen. Are there any use cases that you're seeing that, you know, you didn't even envision, right? Like, you know, somebody comes to Superfluid and they say, hey, Fran, I want to do this or that. And you guys are the standard that I'm going to use for it. Has any of that risen up yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, traction-wise, at the moment, it's mostly salaries from contributors, people doing DCAs. We're starting to ramp up on the subscription side. So if anybody in the audience is interested in that, there's a couple of projects built on Superfluid that are, you know, looking at the subscription side. And I think that's going to be a very, very big opportunity. But at the same time, yeah, there's some products that we absolutely had not thought of, especially on the finance side, because nobody in our team has a kind of deep financial education, right? So on that side, we've seen some very, very interesting things coming from some of our community members. On the payment side also, you notice in DeFi, you know, you have people that come from very different backgrounds, and some people have some experiences in traditional finance or some problems that they've had with traditional finance. And then they see something and they're like, wow, this solves everything. This is the solution I was waiting for. So there was one person we spoke with last spring, who had a lot of experience with affiliate marketing. They'd worked for a long time in regulated businesses, well, not gray area businesses. And gray area businesses, as you might know, have a very hard time getting bank accounts. They have a very hard time getting access to any kind of financial services. And affiliate markets are one of the ways they have to promote themselves, because they're also kind of gray area services. But they're also extremely slow. They have 90-day payment terms. They do a lot of unnecessary, you know, KYC AML sometimes, and effectively create a lot of friction because they don't really want to pay out. So what he came up with was a very, very cool system whereby they use Superfluid for subscriptions, right? So if you imagine you want to subscribe to a service, you use Superfluid, you subscribe for every, you know, you subscribe for a service, but you pay every second rather than paying once a month. And then whoever referred you gets a percentage of that stream streamed directly to them, right? So what this does is it immediately cuts that 90-day payout that traditional referral marketing has to a zero-second payout, right? You get paid immediately. As soon as the business gets paid, you get paid as well as a referrer. And this is already very, very impactful for anyone that's ever done referral marketing. But where it gets really exciting, especially for me, was when we realized that that income that the referrer is getting could also be tokenized. So by tokenizing that referrer income, that influencer, that person who referred people, can then sell on that future income on a marketplace to anyone who's willing to take on that risk. So at that point, what you have is an NFT that represents future cash flows that you can trade anywhere in DeFi, right? And obviously it's all open standards, right? It's a traditional NFT. You can see it in MetaMask. You can transfer it. The stream transfers with it. It was just one of the first very, very kind of unique applications that we saw. And I thought it was very interesting how, by using the kind of NFT standard, they were able to, you know, create a transferable future cash flow. Basically, I think this was built like 2 weeks after we released. So, you know, it was one of the really, really, really first hackathons that we were sponsoring. And we found, very, very exciting project.
No, that's awesome. I mean, it's funny you mentioned no one on your team has like deep finance experience, because like, you're rebuilding how we interact with cash flows from the ground up, which is insane.
Yeah, but that's why, right? It's exactly why we are doing it. Like, I think the more you're into something, the harder it is to look at it from the outside, right? And that's the reason you see a lot of traditional finance people that look at DeFi and they're like, this doesn't make sense, right? Well, it does, right? It works. It obviously makes sense, but they can't make sense of it because they've been too deep into other ways of thinking and understanding certain things. So a lot of people we talk to, we try to explain that, you know, with Superfluid, settlement is continuous. And they're like, what do you mean, right? Settlement doesn't work like that. And we're like, it does, you know, it's exactly how we're paying salaries to our team. And they're like, no, you're wrong. You know, settlement happens later. And I'm like, No, it happens every second. And they just can't get it because I guess you get so just used to how things are supposed to work, and then you just can't look at them from outside.
No, you're totally right. Being on the outside makes it easier. The hackathon project you brought up is actually super interesting because basically you have the smart contract streaming money. You take that, you discount it based on its future expected value, apply a discount, et cetera, and you could sell that.
Yeah.
You know, that seems really cool, not only from just the optionality for users, right? You know, or DAOs, like, hey, you can sit here and wait for your stream, or you can get it up front, or you can leverage it maybe in some other way. I feel like that has the potential to take off pretty dramatically within not only salaries, but within other use cases in DeFi too. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the potential for securitized cash flows is pretty much unlimited. And speaking with people in traditional finance, they're all excited about this. And one of the reasons they're excited is because DeFi generally manages to take this stuff and make it reduce the friction a lot, right? So like in traditional finance, you have things like cash flow financing, you have things like payday loans, but they're generally very expensive. And, you know, for example, cash flow financing really only works for very big businesses because the cost to do due diligence, the cost on the regulatory side, the cost to make it work for a financial institution is very high. So they only do this for companies that have millions of dollars of recurring revenue. Now imagine in DeFi, we can bring this down to very small businesses, right? We can bring this down to micro enterprises and allow them to borrow from their future earnings. That's huge, right? And we can do that because in DeFi, we have transparency, we have auditability. And what that means is if you're observing the chain, you can see how much money I'm making. You can see who's paying me. You can see how long they've been paying me. You can see all the details, right? Which means you can run an algorithm on the data that's on chain for every account and immediately decide which ones are worthy of credit or not, right? You can very easily access the information you need to build a credit score on chain. And the moment you have a way of scoring credit, you can much more cheaply provide credit. And so far, nobody's even managed to provide uncollateralized lending to DAOs or even to business in the space, right? So as you said, it's something we're extremely excited about. And I think future cash flow backed loans will be the first step in providing credit on chain because it's not fully uncollateralized, right? It feels like it's collateralized, although it's collateralized by something that doesn't exist yet.
It's actually pretty cool. So I guess one concern for somebody that is going to buy a future cash flow is like the creditworthiness of the other side paying, right? Is there any way to DD or check on chain or some kind if the sender of the stream has enough money to pay that in the future? Like, you know, if I'm getting my salary every month and I wanted to discount that back and sell that, obviously it's contingent on the person sending the stream to have enough money to pay that salary. Is there any way to do that due diligence for that person? And I know we're digging into this like specific hackathon example. It's just super interesting to see what could be built on you guys.
The short answer is no, there isn't really a way to do that because the protocol is built for a complete capital efficiency. Like you can stream money having basically nothing in your account. Like you can literally have a balance of $0 and stream $1 million because the protocol doesn't care about your balance. It only cares that your balance isn't negative. So as long as you have more than zero in your account, you can still stream. So if you have $1 million of income and $1 million of expenses, your streams will keep flowing, right? So it's very hard to say that that's not a legitimate user that can afford the payment to the business, because they have income. So how far up the chain do you go when doing due diligence, right? That becomes the question. So I think it's very hard to really assess that. You can take different measures, right? You can say, how long has this person been streaming? If they started streaming a minute ago and now they're asking for credit, maybe we should not consider that stream, right? Because maybe they just created it a minute ago to try and change the metrics. Has that stream been open for a month and do they have another 10 subscriptions to different products? Well, then maybe they're a legitimate user and we should consider that stream when calculating our rating. But this is all stuff that people that do machine learning can figure out in a few minutes, I think. You know, chain analysis companies can repurpose their software for something useful and start doing credit checks instead of other things.
No, I totally agree. It's interesting. It's just cool to see what could be built on you guys and what people think of when you're building a primitive. You just have no idea how many and the types of apps built on top. One thing we didn't talk too much about is just super apps.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us a bit about, you know, what a super app is and how that leverages Superfluid?
Yeah, sure. So super apps are a concept that we introduced when building the framework. Actually, when we were about to release, we realized that to actually build an application that uses streams, you need to have more control over the lifecycle of a payment. So if you look at a normal application in DeFi, a normal smart contract, it only has to deal with users when users transfer them money, right? So if you think of Uniswap, the way it works, you send money to Uniswap and Uniswap sends you money back. And then you go your separate ways and you don't have an ongoing relationship with the application. In the case of Superfluid apps, you open a stream to the app and then your balance is connected to that app's balance, right? Until you close that stream, you are effectively in a relationship with that app. And what this means is that the app needs to be able to account for every cent that it's receiving until you close that stream. And when you close that stream, it has to know that you close that stream. It needs a way to effectively manage the full life cycle of that financial relationship. So super apps are basically a framework to build applications that know when they're receiving streams of money and can react to those streams changing. In a kind of less technical way, we can say any contract can receive streams, but they won't know they're receiving streams unless they are super apps. They will simply see their balance go up, but they won't understand why it's happening, and they won't know when the stream stops. If you are a super app, you can know that a stream started, you can know that a stream is updated, and you can act when a stream is closed. And this allows you to build proper accounting, which is ultimately the basis for any financial product.
Super cool. Yeah, it just sounds like building a very capital efficient app from the get-go. That might be an oversimplification though.
No, that's it. I mean, the simplest app we built, which was the first Solidity smart contract I wrote, actually, because I was super excited to build on Superfluid. So I taught myself Solidity and I built this app. It does one simple thing. It takes all the incoming streams and it sends them to the owner of the contract. So it takes, imagine it has a million incoming streams and it packages all of them into one stream that goes to the owner of the contract. Basically, it's a super app because if one of those incoming streams is closed, the outgoing stream will be updated to reflect the total income. Now, why is it interesting? Well, that smart contract can manage any amount of cash in streams, right? So it could have a million coming in, a million going out, and that super app always has a zero balance. So it's managing millions of dollars in volume without having any balance whatsoever, right? And that's something that I don't think you could ever see in a traditional smart contract where it's all about TVL and value locked and, you know, storing somebody else's funds. Basically, it's a smart contract that's moving money without ever storing it. And that's something that, you know, we got very excited about. That contract is also transferable. So I can basically take the ownership of that smart contract, transfer it to you, and suddenly you're the one receiving all of those streams. So it formed the basis for a lot of other contracts that were built on Superfluid at hackathons.
That's awesome. And friend, one thing I wanted to talk a bit about was, I mean, we're in this transition where we have a lot of L2s either live or launching. You know, there's Starkware, there's Arbitrum, there's Polygon, there's, you know, Immutable built on Starkware. There's a bunch. There's other L1s like Solana that are a bit faster and cheaper. Or I say a bit, they're definitely faster and cheaper. I'm curious your take on, you know, how Superfluid One interacts with L2s or if you can leverage them or you're built on them, which I believe you are in some cases. But more importantly, just like, you know, the human aspect, right? Like, do you think if people are able to send money for free on an L2, like, will they care as much about the streaming aspect? I know this is very different because we're debating transaction costs versus, you know, seeing a balance automatically accrue every second on my computer, which is obviously huge. But I would love your take on the L2 side. I know I threw a lot of questions there, but take it anyway that makes sense.
Yeah, no worries. First of all, yeah, we love the EVM. We think Superfluid will probably live on every EVM out there. We are gearing up to be able to deploy on everything that runs an Ethereum virtual machine. We're very excited about rollups. Like, I can't tell you how excited we're about it because, you know, they're just going to change everything. Having cheaper transactions, having cheaper DeFi, you know, all the stuff that we're talking about realistically just simply can't happen on mainnet, right? It just can't happen. It's too expensive. But the moment you have very cheap transactions, then everything we're talking about starts not only making sense, but you know, being again able to enable use cases which are much closer to us than, you know, just whales leveraging their, you know, millions of dollars on mainnet. It's very exciting for us to deploy on layer twos. And what I can say about the cost, streams are not really about saving gas cost. It's something that a lot of people obviously think about. It's kind of the first thing because people come from very painful times on mainnet. But streams are more about saving mental transaction cost. When you make a payment, you have to do something, right? You have to go to your wallet and sign a transaction and think about it and also pay gas costs. When you open a stream, you think about it once and then that stream goes on forever. So when we started paying some of our team in streams, we set up that stream and I haven't had to touch it or think about it ever since. And that's a non-custodial payment that's happening every second without any interaction from my side. And some of our employees are then taking that salary as they receive it every second and investing it in Bitcoin and Ethereum with streams without having to touch them every second, right? They set it up once and then that stream goes on and buys Bitcoin and Ethereum for them automatically on Ricochet. Being able to automate future payments, there's a lot more to it than simply saving on gas costs. It's about de-risking transactions. It's about paying for things in the future, but deciding on them now. It's about having transparent on-chain information regarding cash flows so that we can build financial products. Honestly, I mean, the cheaper gas costs become, the more excited I get because we can start making cheaper streams. We can start using streams for more use cases. And yeah, overall, you know, when there's more space, people will, you know, play bigger games. And I think things get a lot more exciting with very cheap transactions.
No, I totally agree. I think the L2 side unlocks a lot for you guys that you can do. Just makes everything cheaper, makes everything easier. So I'm pretty excited about that. Fran, to close out, I like to talk to founders about kind of their, you know, their journey. I would love to learn, like, you know, you're building something that's really hard for people early on to conceptualize. Obviously, people get it now because they can use it. I'd love to kind of hear, like, what was the biggest hurdle in, you know, creating, founding Superfluid, building it? I know you probably can't share anything internal, but, you know, what was the biggest roadblock? How'd you get past it? And what advice can you give other founders building in crypto?
Well, it's quite funny, actually. One of our biggest hurdles at the beginning was convincing crypto VCs, crypto investors, that there was a future for on-chain crypto payments. In hindsight, like, it's incredible, but when we were first talking to investors back in 2020, and we were talking about on-chain payments, they thought we were completely crazy. They thought this would never happen. They thought, you know, Ethereum was only for DeFi. They thought Ethereum was only for, you know, speculation. Basically, the narrative was just completely not there for payments, right? So crypto investors thought we were crazy, right? And when the most degen people in the room think you're crazy, you start thinking you're crazy as well, because they're supposed to have very high risk appetite and they don't believe that what you're saying makes any sense, right? So that was very hard, honestly. I mean, I remember I was at ETH Denver in 2020 and I was pitching people and everybody thought what I said made no sense, right? And that was very hard at the time. But funnily enough, we found some people who believed in us who were not crypto investors. Because in the normal world, payments are huge, right? So they saw the value in that at the time, and they saw the value of what we were building and the innovation that we were bringing beyond looking at the narrative of the time, right? So sometimes what I often suggest to crypto founders is, yeah, sure, you know, the flavor of the month is, you know, metaverse NFTs, but you can think beyond that, right? What's the flavor tomorrow? Are you solving a problem that's not, it's not a popular problem? That's probably a good thing to try and solve for, right? You'll have less competition. There'll be fewer people trying it out right now. So sometimes, you know, doing things that aren't necessarily, you know, the fashion of the month can be rewarding longer term. And sometimes I think crypto is a bit too focused on just hype cycles, right? And hype cycles are good for investors, but they're not good for builders because builders get distracted by hype cycles and development cycles last longer than hype cycles. So if you start building everything that's fashionable, you probably finish your product by the time it's not fashionable anymore, right? So you really should try and be more radical in your decisions and not follow hype too much. And that also goes on the financial side, where I always suggest to people to not try and build and trade at the same time, because you're going to fail at both, right? If you're a builder, just build and hodl. If you're a trader, then do your thing and, you know, live on Twitter. But if you're a builder, you should just build. I think too many people get distracted by too many shiny new toys in DeFi and kind of leave aside, you know, the beauty of solving hard problems in scalable ways.
Totally with you, Fran. Fran, it's been a pleasure having you guys on to share the story. We've been waiting a while, and I just am super happy that we're able to do it. We're proud to be investors in you and Superfluid. We think that as a primitive, you guys will unlock a ton of new use cases. I mean, not only the ones we talked about, but just excited to see what rolls out. For those looking to get involved, I mean, Superfluid has a great doc outline at docs.superfluid.finance. You could also check out the app I mentioned. We'll link all this in the show notes as well. Fran, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And what I would say is anybody interested, join us on Discord. So that's discord.superfluid.finance, the best single place to join our community and, you know, join in the fun of designing new financial stuff.
Awesome.
It's going to be exciting where we go from here.
I agree. Fran, thanks again.
Cheers. Thanks, Tom.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.